Get my mic on. There we are. Call the meeting to order. The next item on the agenda is approval of minutes from the January 4th, 2021 meeting. Do I have a...
Move for approval.
You have a motion? Do you have a second?
Second.
All right, all is in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, motion carries. Next item on the agenda is public comments. If there's anyone here for public comment, please come forward. You have 2 minutes. State your name and address for the record.
Good afternoon to you all. Thank you so much. My name is John Wright. I live at 145 Rose Lane. I'm here and I want to have the opportunity to discuss two items in, under item 6A and 6C. I think the 6 Mile community, George Freeman and Ad Cage 6 Mile, has been before you all with this issue as it relates to a request that I think it dates back about 16 years, what they initially agreed to and what they had hoped for as it relates to land use in their community. So you've seen this issue before, you've had it before, it's been to council and back to you now. So I'm hoping that you guys will make the right decision and go ahead on and grant the community what they requested or what they had agreed to more than 16 years ago. And then the other item on, I'm also here to support the gentleman on item 6A and the annexation on Theodore Road. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Cindy Watts with Watts Park, the spokesman for the family. Just want to let you know that if there are questions, we are here and available to answer.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Nathaniel Hutchinson. I reside at 1051 Theodore Road. I also own the parcel property on 1065 Theodore Road, which is in the town of Mount Pleasant. I'm requesting to be annexed with my 1051 resident. I have here in my possession a deeded copy of a strip of land that was between my property and the D.R. Horton subdivision, which they, in fact, which I agreed to, in fact, that they annexed into the town of Mount Pleasant. So when I wake up in the morning, I walk in my backyard and I live in Arwindaw, but my shed is in Mount Pleasant. So I would like to be annexed into the town of Mount Pleasant. That would make my property completely in the town of Mount Pleasant, as opposed to just being on the borderline. So I do respectfully request that on behalf of council this morning. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Okay.
George Freeman, 1450 Bowman Road, Director of Community Activity for CAGE. We all understand that any citizen can bring something before you. But with this project that's before you today, the community has made a decision about the 12,500 square feet almost 12 or 16 years ago. We've had two comprehensive plans since this 12,500 square foot minimum was put in place. And the citizens of Mount Pleasant feel that this is how this community should be. We now have a settlement task force that we're working on to make sure to ensure these communities exist long into the future. We would greatly appreciate that you would deny this request, because even if you went to the zoning that they request, they could put in, even though they say 32, anyone who would own this property could put in more than 32 units, because that's what you would be providing to them today. Also, if you make this decision today, there are three developers that I know of personally that are waiting to see what happens on this decision, and they will be coming back with the same request in the 6 and 7 Mile community. Please do not disrupt our community. Our communities are the type of communities why people have moved to Mount Pleasant. That open space that you see in our communities. We love to develop the way our community is, and we know that people who have moved here love the way our communities are. Please do not approve this request. Thank you.
All right.
Good afternoon. Chris Donato, 1250 Fairmont Avenue, Mount Pleasant. I'm the engineer representative for the Watts family. That's in front of you today with the annexation. What the town has in front of them is a very unique situation in which an existing development with 31 units is coming to the town and saying, we would like to join the town. We would then like to add 30% of our site as open space. Currently it's zero. We would then like the residents to pay for the town services they're using. We would like to remove the septic tanks. that are being used by the 31 units, add gravity sewer, pay the Mount Pleasant Water Works impact fees. We would also like to pay the town impact fees for the buildings, for the homes. We would want to beautify our portion of Six Mile Road, and we'd like to keep the historic trees when we do this. And all of that we want to do, and we do not want to increase the density of the site. There are 31 units on the site. We would be limited to 3 units per acre. We have 11 acres on this site, so the absolute max is 33. Cannot be more than that per the zoning we're requesting. From the plan that you had in front of you, I showed 32. And that was, it's less than 33 because of the trees and all the savings that we're trying to keep to make the site as nice as possible. And we're here if you have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Jennifer Hightower with Dominion Energy at 1277 Chuck Valley Boulevard. We have a rezoning request in front of you guys this afternoon. It's item 6B. Just wanted to let you know we have our operations team as well as our architect present to answer any questions you may have. But just wanted to point out this is a really critical location for us, and we are not proposing any changes to the use of the property. Just want to make some changes to the site. So, but happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here to speak for public comment? All right. Moving on to the next item on the agenda is old business. A, this is a request to rezone.
Yeah, when I emailed you all, I think it was on Friday, the applicant has requested for another deferral. So this was deferred from January, and they have asked for another deferral to March.
I believe I saw that email that someone has COVID.
Yes, yes, ma'am.
So it's, yeah, so it's a legitimate ask for deferral. do we need a motion to
I move for a deferral.
All right.
Mm-hmm. On item 4A.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, we are deferred to March for that. Item 4B.
All right, thank you, Ms. Whitley. So this item was deferred from January. Staff and Planning Commission have been looking at this for quite some time. It is a proposal to amend our nonconformities ordinance section in our zoning code. It pertains to nonconforming lots, structures, and uses. And we brought this to you last time, and if you'll recall, we've started this, as I said, back in March. We've had some meetings, we've had a public hearing. We brought sections forward, then we decided to kind of pull back and bring it all together at one time and in one piece. It did go to Planning Commission for a public hearing December 16th. When I came to you last month, we had just gotten those recommendations from Planning Commission, and we were still kind of going through those and working with the members to make sure we had it all right. We've had an extra month now to work with them, make sure we captured everything that they wanted. And it was all good suggestions. And so the draft you have before you now does incorporate those Planning Commission changes, which some of it was kind of a cleanup, making sure we were consistent throughout the entire document. And just a brief overview, the purpose of this ordinance, really the impetus was some of our developments that had become non-conforming. And we started talking about what if there was a natural disaster or something, what would they be able to do with their property? That was the impetus of this. And so as we started digging into it, we said, you know, this whole ordinance really needs an overhaul. It's a little archaic. Originally, you would have these non-conforming ordinance to sort of just get rid of anything non-conforming. You wanted to totally get rid of them. You didn't want to work with them to bring them into compliance. They were seen as sort of obnoxious or a nuisance. Well, there's been a trend now towards when you have more infill and redevelopment, seeing what you can do to work with site improvements, redevelopment, reuse of properties. And so we wanted to take a little bit of a softer approach with this ordinance change. And so that's what's before you now. So I'm going to touch just briefly on the primary parts of this where we feel like it's important. And again, the big thing when we talk about nonconformities is we laid out in B1 that this is legal nonconformities. Really, that's not a necessary term. When we say nonconformities, that implies it's legal. If it's illegal, it's not nonconforming, it's not grandfathered in, it's just illegal. And the difference between that is, was it, when it was put in place, was it put in place according to the ordinances in effect at that time? So there's your distinction there. We did add this new section where it talks about an action created by government. So if you had perhaps DOT come in and need to take some right-of-way, we didn't want any sort of action by any government authority to create a hardship for a property owner. And so we wanted to put this in there. One of the things that Planning Commission did recommend, and it made sense, we in 6 here, where it talks about damage or destruction due to unforeseen hazards, the whole impetus, like I said, for this ordinance change was, if you have your property destroyed by a hazard, natural disaster, what have you, we're not going to make you calculate 50%, whether you're 1% or 100%. We're going to let you build back your property in kind. And obviously, you're going to have to, we're going to review that and make sure it meets everything that it should. And we're not going to allow them to go beyond any nonconformity. But so we deleted that 50% because it's really irrelevant when we're talking about destruction due to a natural disaster. Again, so another important aspect of this new ordinance is this tiered approach. So instead of saying you're nonconforming, you have to either go away or come into complete compliance. We wanted to sort of address it, like I said, with refill and infill development, where we have these situations where it may be nonconforming due to something as small as a some sort of landscaping type plan, it could be lighting, anything like that. So we came up with these three tiers. Class 1 has to do with a nonconforming use of land. Class 2 is buildings and structures. And then Class 3 is where we get to our site features and our lots of record and signage. And then within that Class 3 tier, we have this second sort of tiered system where we look at, okay, if you're coming in and you're going to reuse a property and you want to redevelop, why are you nonconforming? Is it your parking, your stormwater, your sidewalks? And so we kind of review those on a case-by-case basis. That way we can fit these new uses in without necessarily making them come into complete compliance on properties that have already been developed and aren't necessarily have the ability to come into compliance. We do have a new section also where we address mobile homes. As you're aware, when properties automatically annex in, they're zoned R1 right now. That is a problem a lot of times in our settlement communities because you'll have mobile homes, rural compounds, and those are all allowed in those areas and on the CC district. So when they come in as R1, their mobile homes, manufactured housing is no longer a permitted use. So we've had some cases where folks have come in and they have an old structure and they need to replace it. And we've had to make them rezone their property in order just to replace their manufactured home. And so we wanted to allow for that, those sorts of situations. And then last, we do have our special plan or zoning areas. Again, this is an exemption. So you think about the historic district, we'll have some different regulations in that area. And then also when we start to look at other plans, so for instance, the Shim Creek area, we may have some guidelines that would eventually get adopted. And those guidelines would take precedent over our nonconforming ordinance. So we're just allowing for those special area plans that may come in the future. There is an appeal process, as with everything else in our ordinance. And that's all I have, and I'm certainly happy to answer any questions.
All right. Members of the committee, do you have any questions on this?
No, ma'am. I think they did a great job trying to come up with all the issues that may occur and that weren't in the ordinance before. And I think Planning Commission did a great job as making their suggestions. So I'd move for approval.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. Any further discussion, Ms. Hyatt? No. I want to echo what Howard said. Thank you so much. This has been a long time in progress and very complicated. So thank you for bringing something so clear to the committee. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Motion passes. Moving on to annexations, 5A.
Okay, this is the only annexation we have that is not requesting a different zoning district. This is at 3804 Garden Hill Road. You have seen this, it's been a few months back, but it is a request to annex a one-acre tract of land. It is currently in Charleston County, and it is vacant. You can see there in the aerial, Garden Hill Road in between, and it's near the Beehive Tract. Here's our future land use map, and here's the star right here. So we got Gadsden, and then Beehive over here, Lieben Road. So it's a one-acre tract of land, and it's actually some interest of Habitat for Humanity. They came through a few months ago, and they were requesting an annexation and a zoning, and at that time they were requesting R4. There was some issues with some folks in the surrounding area. They ended up, I think, withdrawing that petition, and now they are back, and they are just requesting to annex in automatically as R1. This has went through, or it's getting ready to go through our residential design review team, and we're going to look at sort of the feasibility of splitting this lot into two, where it would be two R1 Habitat for Humanity homes. And I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Do we have a motion?
I'll move for approval, and then I've got a question.
Wait a second.
Second.
All right, we're in discussion. Mr. Howard?
Chapman? Where is it contiguous to the town?
You can see it backs up to the R3 development on the map there. So this whole development here, I'm sorry, yep, that's R3 right there. So that's where it's contiguous.
Okay, and is it only going to have access on Garden Hill Road?
Yes.
Okay, and this is for Habitat for Humanity?
Yes, sir.
And you say they're going to split it into two sites?
They're exploring that option. Just sort of a preliminary review, they might have to. Obviously, it would go to Planning Commission for sketch plan approval. We would be looking at the access at that time. That is a dirt road. And we would also be looking at whether they might need to get a waiver for their land, their depth to width ratio. But so it would be getting further review, but the most they could get out of it would be about two lots, given the R1 development standards.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Motion carries. Recommended to approve annexation. Moving on to item 6, review of Planning Commission recommendations. Item A.
Okay. So this first one before you is a request to annex in zone R4, medium density residential district. It's about a 0.80 acre tract of land located at 1051 Theodore Road. Again, the first part of this request is an annexation. It is contiguous to the town of Mount Pleasant, you can see here. So adjacent, the applicant actually owns the adjacent property as well, which is right here, 1075. The property in question is this one, 1051, and then as you can see, it backs up to the Beehive Tract. And so this is our current zoning map. Again, this property is in the county right now, and in the county it's zoned, I believe, R3, or R4. It is R4 in the county. And what the property owner would like to do, essentially, is when the Beehive Tract came in 2016, his other lot here and this adjacent lot were also annexed in at that time, and I believe the plan was to provide another access for the Beehive development. Right. For whatever reason, that did not occur, and so the applicant now has one lot in the town, zoned R4, and it's currently vacant. And then he lives on this site. So there's one single-family residence on this site, and it is in the county. He is requesting to zone R4 because that would make him consistent with his adjacent property. And as you can see, what he would like to do, if you can see that green line there, what he would like to do is adjust his lot line. And we first had a submittal in come through our design review team for an adjustment to that lot line. And that's where we discovered that we had not only two different zonings, but we had two different jurisdictions. And so if he automatically annexed in, the property would be automatically zoned R1, and there would still be a problem because we would have a split zone piece of property. And so his desire is to bring this property in a similar fashion to his adjacent R4 property, adjust that lot line a little bit, move it over to where his single family residence is, and then create a larger lot here. And so that is all I have, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Do we have any questions?
I don't have any questions. I move for approval.
Do we have a second?
I guess I had a question.
Okay, I'll second for the purposes of discussion.
Okay. I assume since this is R4, by moving that property line, that's going to allow, I mean, there's a reason to do that, to allow subdivision of that lot, probably.
Yeah, so I think under... homes. Yes, ma'am. I think under R4, I do, and the applicant can speak more to this, but I think his desire is to, the purpose of moving the lot line, I believe, is to save a row of trees he has planted here. But I think his plan for this lot is to sell it, and you could probably get two lots, perhaps three. It would have to go through the design process, and we would have to look at that once there was a submittal. But I do think that there is a plan for him to at least sell that and perhaps build two lots.
But that one's already zoned R4.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. Do we have any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right.
No.
No. No. Okay. All right. Recommend to council 2-1.
Okay.
For item A. Item B, rezoning from AB to PI2. This is the Dominion property, correct?
Yes, ma'am. Moving right along, this is a request to rezone from area-wide business district to public institutional 2 district. As you mentioned, this is the property where Dominion Energy operates. They've had their offices there for, I think, well over 35 years. And let me get our bearings here. So you can see it here. It's adjacent to the new development there, Bentley Park, and Mallard Lakes. So it sits kind of in between there. Again, it is currently zoned AB. You can see the surrounding zoning. Our comprehensive plan does designate it for community facilities. And it's about 4.87 acres. The PI2 zoning would allow it to the zoning to more closely match the current operations. Like I said, for about 35 years, the site has served as the operations center. It has served East Cooper. It was SCE&G. Now it's Dominion Energy. It is currently improved with the office building up front, so you can see from a street view there. And in 2018, this in-person customer service function was removed from the front office. So it has continued to operate as is, minus that walk-in customer service function. While the office is no longer open to the public for walk-in traffic or payments, the employees still occupy that office, and the electric operations employees continue to occupy the second office and warehouse in the back. And the goal really here is to ensure they would like to do some improvements. They can't do it under the current zoning. They need to rezone to PI2 so that it matches the operations and so that they can make some improvements to the site. The goal really is to ensure that there would be adequate response in any future storm event. So here's kind of a current conceptual plan of what's on the ground. You can see that front customer office area, the crew area in the back. There's an existing truck shed, and you could see that from the street view. And they have went through a preliminary design review. This, if the rezoning is approved, public institutional 2 would be reviewed both through our DRT and then through our non-DRB staff level. But what they would like to do is to make it one large office. It would be a single office building, and then they would make improvements to the material storage area in the laydown yard. And again, this would not change any of the day-to-day operations or functions. It would just allow them to improve the site to better meet the needs. And that's all I have. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Do we have a motion?
Move to approve.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
All right, motion passes. Item number C, this is the rezoning of the Watts Mobile Home Park.
Okay. And you have seen this before. Last time it came through, it was a petition to annex and zone R4. What's before you today is to annex and zone R2, which is low-density residential district. So the first portion of this request is to annex the property. It's 11.54-acre tract of land. You can see here that it is recommended for settlement community land uses. It is currently improved with 31 manufactured homes. I think more recently most of them have been removed or relocated. There's probably about 4 manufactured homes left on site. And you can see it here outlined in green. The comprehensive plan future land use map does recommend settlement community land uses for this area. And the request before you is to zone it to R2, low density residential district. And I don't know if you want to take the annexation first and then the rezoning, or if you want me to incorporate it all together.
Can we just hear it all together? Thank you.
Okay. So it is currently improved, as I said, as a manufactured housing unit. In the county, it's zoned S3, Special Management 3 District. It's also in the MPO Overlay District within the county. The S3 District allows for 3 units an acre. That's similar to what we have under our comp plan, 3 units an acre. So there's no request to change the comp plan or the density. Last year, as I said, the applicant submitted a request to zone R4. That request was recommended for denial by Planning Commission and committee, and then they subsequently withdrew. And I put together just a small chart here so you can see exactly what they are now in the county, which is the S3. Again, the density count would be the same. Without water or sewer under S3, they would be held to 14,500 square foot lots. If they had water or sewer, it would be 12,500. Their R4 request months ago was for 4,000 square foot lots, and then the request before you today would provide them with 8,000 square foot lots. They have submitted a conceptual plan, and that was included in your packet. And that would be something that would, if the rezoning is approved, this would go through our residential DRT review, and then it would come to the Planning Commission for sketch plan approval. The applicant has indicated that they would like to redevelop the property according to those R2 standards. Again, at 11.5 acres, the maximum achievable under that density would be 34 units. It would be more like 31 or 32 with the lot sizes. We did recently, well, about 2 years ago, we adopted a new green space preservation plan. So if this was approved and the lots are under 10,000 square feet, they would be required to set aside 30% open space. And so you can see they've included that in their conceptual plan. But so that would probably limit them to more like 31 lots. And I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
Committee, any questions?
Yes, ma'am. The applicant is requesting to not be in the sweet grass basket overlay district.
Mm-hmm.
What specifics with what we're doing here, because we're basically keeping the same number of lots. Mm-hmm. We're protecting the trees pretty well, with the exception of something on 6 Mile that I'm going to question the engineer. But what specifics are different with what is being proposed than what is in the overlay district?
So the overlay district states that it takes precedent over any underlying zoning. So whether they requested R1, R3, R4, whatever, if they were included in that sweetgrass basket overlay district, they would be required to have a minimum lot size of 12,500 square feet. So Coming in to the overlay and requesting R2, there would be no benefit to requesting R2, because they would have to comply with the 12.5 for the Sweetgrass Basket Overlay District. So that's really the primary difference.
And the lot sizes today in the county are not at 12.5. Is that correct?
Without water and sewer, they would be 14.5. With one or the other, they would be 12.5.
So we're taking out the septic tanks, putting in water and sewer, and that's where the rub is, I guess, because the water and sewer is taking up, those lines are taking up some of the 12.5. Is that a safe statement?
That might be a safe statement.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Ms. Hyatt, do you have any questions?
If we go back to that picture you had,
of course,
that showed the trees.
Yes.
Now, when they put in the lines, are they going to the back or along the road? I mean, where would that be required? Because that's going to disrupt some of these trees that they're telling us they'll save. They might not be able to.
We would review that through residential design review. Our stormwater folks, public services, Mount Pleasant Water, we would all look at that, and they would be required to save. We would look at not only the size of the tree, but the grade, and it would be, the efforts would be made to save as many trees as possible. But that would be reviewed at the time. If this were approved, it would have to go through sketch plan and design review team. And so we would look at those sorts of, the infrastructure and all those things at that time.
I mean, even some of these trees in the green space that they'd like to save, they might not be able to with pipes running like to the back of the property. This might take out several of these smaller green circles. I don't know.
The Planning Commission recommended denial. What was their reasoning behind that?
They recommended denial. I think the vote was 6-3. Their primary concern really was the fact that we did just adopt a comprehensive plan. It calls for settlement community land uses, which the appropriate zoning for that would be the community conservation district, which would require the 12,500 square feet. So that would put you in line with the Sweetgrass Basket Overlay District. Those that voted against the denial, they saw more as, you know, what is going on in the area, how it has changed over the years. They looked at the zoning map. You know, we have an adjacent R4, so they looked at sort of how the area has transitioned over the years, and that was sort of what they were looking at. But it was the fact that it was recommended for settlement community land uses.
I misunderstood, but under the new comprehensive plan, I thought we were moving away from the CC designation, that was no longer going to be a zoning that we were going to be using. Is that...
Well, it's still in there now. Okay. So until we totally update the zoning code, we're going to have those zoning districts. We're actually, staff is working on a text amendment right now that would address that automatic zoning when you annex in to R1. We thought we might have it ready for February Commission, but we want to look it over a little bit and send it to Corporation Council. But I think you're probably going to see that in the next couple of months, and that's going to come ahead of the rest of the zoning code rewrite. But for now, we still have the same zoning ordinance and the same residential use districts in place.
Okay.
And so that community conservation would be appropriate for the settlement community.
Under our comprehensive plan?
Yes, ma'am.
So the question I have is, with that community conservation, what is the density per acre? Is it still 3 units per acre?
Yes, ma'am.
So the density, so it seems like the objection from the surrounding communities is really this lot size issue, right? That they want to keep it in feel with the settlement community lot size of 12,500. If they can get the same number of units with a 12,500 lot size, I guess maybe that's a question for the applicant. Would you mind, Mr. Donato, would you mind coming forward? Sorry.
Do you want me to state my name again?
No, it's all right. I guess my question is why can't the site plan incorporate the lot sizes if the density is the same?
So the density number is the same. With the 12,500
the Watts family will fall below the 31 units. We did do a plan internally to see where that, and it's in the 24 to 26 with some variables with the 12,500 square foot lots. But where the Watts family is coming from and what they're asking for is just to keep what they have. They've had 31 for 40 years, and what they're in front of you asking for, hey, can we just keep what we've had for the last 40 years? But yes, the larger lots does decrease the number, and it will be well below the 3 units per acre. I shouldn't say well below, but it'll be below the 3 units per acre. But the R4 does keep, allow the Watts to keep what they currently have.
You mean the R2?
Excuse me, ma'am?
R2.
Yeah, R2, sorry. R2 allows them to keep what they currently have.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And could I address the question about the trees?
Sure, of course.
So we still have to go through an extensive review process. And the Michelle and her staff are not going to allow us to, say, take out some of those trees just to put in the pipes. We'll have to make certain we engineer around them. And like Mr. Chapman knows, we will still have to work with SCDOT to make certain that we keep proper spacing. But I'm here to tell you, I've worked with Michelle for a while. She's not going to just say, oh, yeah, you can take those trees out to put those pipes in.
I've watched it right behind my neighborhood. The whole place had to be clear cut because of the pipes, not really because of where the houses were going, which was very heartbreaking.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, it made sense, I guess, if it had to go because the house was going there. But they took out pretty much everything because of what had to go underground. So
well,
something a lot of people don't realize.
Sure, if you see from the current plan, especially, I can especially speak to the ones that are in the green space. There's nothing going in there. There's no pipes. Mm-hmm. There's zero infrastructure, zero, other than there'll probably be some cleaning up underneath ground. There's not going to be any ground disturbance or digging down in those green areas, 100%. I mean, we're talking about where the road is, and we actually have experience with either moving the pipes out into the road to get away from the trees, or they can bore underneath the trees as well. So if that gives you any a better feeling, especially in the green areas, there just won't be any work. There's nothing going there to take out those trees.
I mean, doesn't the pipe start at the beginning and it'll have to run the full length of the property, won't it?
Well, inside the road.
That's why I was asking, is it going to the back or the front?
It'll start from where 6 Mile is, and it'll stay inside the right-of-way to go all the way to the back of the cul-de-sac.
Staying along the road.
Staying along the road.
They build it on the back of the property, the drainage, and not along the road, so then it's far more destructive to do it that way. But
sure.
Okay. All right. Okay. And Mr. Chapman, do you have any questions?
Well, I was just going to point out and ask, and he just answered it, that I thought, and he confirmed, that the water and sewer pipes would go inside the road right-of-way.
Yes, sir.
What about when you start digging out the septic tanks on the properties?
Well, that'll have to be very carefully, and that'll be a lot less intense work than, say, trenching, because at least where the septic tanks currently are, you know, it's already been dug in that area, but that'll have to be carefully done. We've had some experience with some other projects where there's septic tanks and trees, and we this will be a note on one of our plans that an arborist will need to be on site to make certain that they're what they do, if they do find any roots, that they cut the roots rather than ripping the roots. But where the septic tanks currently are, generally, I don't know where every septic tank is, I'm not trying to make that statement, but generally they're in the more open areas. You don't want a septic tank near a tree. The tree's going to destroy that tank. But any work in that area, we can make certain we note that that is, you know, careful work done with an arborist present.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you all so much for your time.
This was for her. Now, the neighborhood next door is R4, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's just funny how those lots being R2 still pretty much line up with the density that's behind it, other than the green space. But the lot sizes don't really look any larger in R2, that's strange.
You know, in thinking about this and thinking about the needs of the settlement communities and their desires, you know, what seems to me be the positives of this is, one, it you know, it annexes a property, a good-sized property into the town, which we're moving towards, you know, trying to encourage annexations. It eliminates 31 septic tanks, which I think is a very positive thing for the community, for health, you know, health reasons and pollution reasons. The sticking point that I have is that, you know, they're asking to keep what they have, but there's a significant difference in revenue for 31 mobile homes versus 31 single family homes, right? That's it's a huge financial difference. And I guess my question is why can't they will still make money adhering to the comprehensive plan's guidelines of 12,500 square foot lots? I think they will still be able to extract economic value from their property and honor the community at the same time. So that's the balance that I'm trying to understand right now and is influencing me. Ms. Hyatt, do you have anything further to say? No. Mr. Chapman?
I have a question, I guess, of Ms. Watts, if we can ask her to come up.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. When we started to review this at the beginning, we had a number of individuals come to us during public comment period who lived in the neighborhood. And February 1 was the date in which everybody was supposed to be gone. Where are we with that, number one? And number two, have they all been given assistance, if you will, with that move?
Yes, sir. We have about 9 units that still have people living in them. There's some additional homes that have already been sold, but they're vacant and haven't been moved. Out of the 9 remaining, about 7 of them have their plans in place. They are working through their plans, but they hit some delay or kink that it just wasn't working through today. So they have been given an extension. There are only 2 that are still working on their plan. We have been actively engaged the whole time and will continue to be to help in what ways we can. We have helped a lot with what various needs are, from whether it was a construction dumpster for 3 months or whether it's on the phone call and helping with some of the hurdles you face when you start dealing with government agencies and you're not sure and you're getting different answers. What every need they've come to us and expressed, if we could help, we've helped. You know, we've helped as much as we can, and we are continuing to help. And sometimes that means picking up back taxes so something's clear for them to go, or sometimes that means, so it's an individual, very fluid thing. There were some people we had the based on a survey to them, we had the consultant come in because we don't know a whole lot about this either. He met with them as a group. He's been accessible to them. He brought in people to talk to them about what the different options could be and what they need to think about. And now that initial was done and people started getting plans together, even though he's been accessible, we have become more proactive in just helping them process their plans when they need it. Now, again, some people didn't need it and didn't desire to do that. And we also have to be respectful that this is their personal business. I mean, you can't just go barreling in. But we are checking in and we are asking where things are. When they say, well, you know, we're just hitting this roadblock here, here, and here, and say, well, do you mind if I make some calls and see if we can get some answers for you? And so that's the kind of things we've been doing as well.
So, Ms. Watts, I would like to commend you for all the work. I mean, as a property owner, you have gone above and beyond. I mean, for people that are on a month-to-month lease, really your only obligation was to give them 30 days notice.
Yes, ma'am.
And you gave them far more notice than that, and the assistance that you have provided, you know, connecting them to all the other mobile home lots that are in the community to help them get moved. I think that you have really done an exemplary job of supporting these individuals as they move on. I again, my balance is trying to respect your rights as a property owner to
sure.
exploit your property as is allowed under the law and under the zoning. And I guess my question is why 8,000 square foot lots? Why not 12,500 square foot lots?
Basically, we were looking at the number of units we have and trying to keep those units. After the Planning Commission meeting, I went back and looked at everything again to kind of look through that. One of the things that was also raised, though, is that larger lots could accommodate larger homes. But larger homes are less compatible with the larger, more expensive homes are less compatible with the settlement community. We feel like what we have is the best plan for everyone involved, that it's the most solid plan, and that it will allow those type of homes to be nestled more among the trees. You know, I know there was questions about the piping and all. The water system is already in. That was done years and years back. So those pipes are already in place down the road. So that's where, you know, again, we've been there 40 years. We're not asking to increase density. We're just asking to keep what we've got, what we've worked on. And at the same time, our concern was keeping the trees, okay? Because if you do look on Six Mile and those other communities, like you said, they clear cut. You know, there's been national builders approach us. We don't want it clear cut. We want to preserve the integrity of that land. And we feel like this plan with those homes and keeping adding the green space and keeping all those trees meet the spirit and most of the requirements if it were in the overlay. So, you know, that's kind of where I guess the compromise is. That's not a popular word, but I mean, you know, there's three entities here. You know, as far as what it can do for the town, how it affects the community, and how it affects our family. And so those trees are very important to us to go through this process to try to have some limits on what happens when it's not ours.
All right. Thank you. Does anyone have any further questions for Ms. Watts?
No.
No. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You know, this is not an easy one, I don't think at all. Do we have a motion from the committee?
Can we separate the motion?
Sure.
I would move for the approval of the annexation.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
All right, annexation, it will be a recommendation for approval. Now on to the rezoning. Do we have a motion from committee on rezoning?
Well, I'll start out with a motion to approve.
All right. Do we have a second? No, we don't. We don't have a second. And you know, I understand the point that was made regarding the larger lot sizes potentially being an overbuild for that area, and. But I still struggle with that because of the word that we have gotten from the communities is that they want those larger lot sizes to be in keeping with it. So Ms. Hyatt, do you want to make a motion?
I'll second the motion.
You'll second the motion to approve?
Or
okay.
Just to...
Okay. Is there any further discussion that we have?
Yeah. The problem, again, is... You know, I asked the question, what is the difference between the overlay district and what they're presenting?
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I heard was the lot size. That's the only thing I heard. Did I miss something, Ms. Reed? It's the only difference is the lot size.
With regards to this development, yeah. I mean, the Sweetgrass Basket Overlay District does allow for other things,
right.
But when it comes to this property and how the zoning is applied as an overlay and then the underlying, it really boils down to the lot size.
Is there anything we can do if we are to approve these small lots? And that will guarantee that the only difference is the lot size.
Well, you can't put conditions on the rezoning.
I know.
I think really you're going to be limited by your density. So on 11 acres, the maximum you're going to get, take away the trees, the infrastructure, the required 30% green space, take away all of that, you would still only get 34 lots maximum. So then you add in the infrastructure, the trees, the minimum lot sizes, those sorts of things. I think really this is the only achievable outcome, and it might be that 32 is a little more and they may lose a lot. I know they're showing 32 on here, but I don't see it at all possible to get more than 32 based on that required. And that's one thing about this lot size, is that if we go larger, we're going to have to drop that down to 20% open space. So if you want to think about it in terms of what you're getting with that smaller lot size, you're getting an additional 10% of open space if you want to think about it in terms of that. So if you went above 10,000 square feet, our open space would drop down. The requirement would be 20% as opposed to 30%. But I really think what you're seeing here, you're not going to be able to achieve the maximum of 34.
And the only way we could limit the lot size is to force the 12,500 square foot requirement, correct?
We didn't deny the request.
As part of our motion, limit the number of lots.
I don't think we could do that.
Yeah, you can't limit the number of lots.
No,
really,
I just wanted to put that on the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
But we can move to deny the rezoning, and then request them to come back with being in the Sweetgrass Basket Overlay District, which was created for a reason. And this would be more in keeping with our comprehensive plan. So the current motion is to approve the rezoning. We have a second. Are we comfortable to vote? Those in favor of approval, say yes.
Aye.
Aye.
And I'll say no. So recommendation for approval to council. And I would hope that perhaps there could be some discussion between Cage and
yes.
The Watts to discuss further these lot sizes and the impacts that's going to have on the surrounding communities, because I think that could be an interesting discussion for that issue. Okay, moving on to item number 7, review and possible action with regard to the listing of historic properties and structures. So this was at full council, and this was sent back to us to kind of go through. There are 38 properties, is that correct? Or 35?
There are 35.
35 properties, and I believe there were objections lodged with 5 or 6 of those properties.
Five.
So perhaps we can go through those 5
Absolutely.
Properties. And,
yes.
And were there any, and we all received the presentation that had all 35 properties in it, and I know I went through them, and I didn't see any additional properties that I felt should be added to this list of 5. So did you all have any other properties you wanted us to take a look at?
No,
a closer
ma'am.
Look at? No? Ms. Hyatt? No. Okay. So could we go through those 5?
Absolutely. Real quick, to follow up on what you said, we did, so from town council meeting to today, we have not heard from any more property owners. The ones it looks like what we have is 704 Pitt, 740, 826, 503, and then 627 Pitt. And one of his many parting gifts was to give us a PowerPoint where we can go straight. So I've put an asterisk next to the ones that have objected. So hopefully we can get there quickly, of course. Yeah, how do I do that? Function, what?
Take off the pointer.
Thank you.
Yeah, function what?
I don't have that.
Martine,
I got the pointer.
Oh, no, Martine.
Oh.
Well, Martine comes and gets that fixed for me. I did want to clarify a couple of things from the last meeting. Thank you.
So maybe you could go.
What was that?
Switch.
Yeah, that might be the better way to do it. Just a couple of things we wanted to, I'll touch on while she's doing that. There was talk about. Yeah, we'll just, that's fine, as long as I can get my pointer going to 503 Pitt. There was talk about opting out of, you know, when we started getting these letters, there was talk about how do you opt out of the designated recommendation? And so just to kind of clarify, there's really no opt-out way to do it. What there is the Historic District Preservation Commission has reviewed. They started with 138. They narrowed that down to 35, and they made their recommendation. And then town council does have the ability to modify that recommendation based on the input you receive. So I just wanted to talk about that opting out option. It's really not there. And then it is under town council's purview to decide on that recommendation or not. And then second, there is that appeals process. So if there's an objection to it, then someone can appeal to it. And so I just wanted to kind of clarify that. And I also wanted to talk about one other thing real quick. When we talk about these, the boundaries of the Old Village Historic District.
Oh, thank you.
You can go. Perfect. Yeah, okay, thank you. When we talk about the boundaries of the Old Village Historic District, obviously all these properties are already in that district. And so just for some clarification, when anybody within the boundaries of that district, they essentially, if they want to make any change that's non-vegetative, they are required to go to the Historic District Preservation Commission. It could be, you know, hardscapes, sidewalks, patios, decks, anything like that. What this designation does is just give a higher level of review. So whether it's materials, siding, those sorts of things, windows that give that architectural feature to it. So I just kind of wanted to clarify that those folks already have to go to the board for pretty much everything that's non-vegetative. It's just sort of a higher scrutiny or higher level of standard. And so those are a couple things that we talked about, I think, at the last committee and then council. So wanted to kind of throw that out there for your thoughts and for some clarification. So this is one of the properties, 503 Pitt Street, and you did receive an objection to this. So this was the first one. And it's before you now. So it was considered contributing by the Historic District Preservation Commission. It meets the 50-year. Staff also recommended it historic. And then, of course, the applicant or the owner had written their justification for why they felt like they should be removed from that recommendation. So,
right. I'm pulling that up right now. So their concern, they did not actually have an architectural excuse for why they didn't feel that their property should be there. Their concern was about property value of the impact on that as far as designating it historic. So, you know, one of the things that when you are designated historic, you are eligible to get some money when you do renovations. Is that correct? There's like a 20%.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, so I think that there's actually like a prestige to having a historic property. So for this property, it's interesting. They did not have a architectural justification for why they should not be included. So the question is whether or not they should be included. Mr. Chapman, do you have any thoughts?
My thoughts are, I think my understanding of what we're doing is we're improving somebody's property. We're making their property more valuable. Whereas some of these people are saying we're not making it more valuable, making it less valuable. I don't understand their rationale. So in terms of 503, I would recommend that we keep it in.
Ms. Hyatt?
Aye. I agree that we keep it in. I'm all for expanding this as much as possible, really, because they still have a way to go in and apply to do things. So this isn't.
There's just another layer.
It's
that
just
they
another
have to go
layer,
through.
And there's no harm with, to me, in us trying to protect the area. Just that that extra amount. They can still apply and request for to have anything done.
Right, to tear it down.
Yeah, and I'd like to try to, you know, make that a little more difficult because I think a lot of these properties are definitely worth keeping.
Okay.
So, So
we will not recommend 503 for removal.
Right.
All right. 627.
So you can see there that it did become contributing when the 50-year ordinance change was made. Staff recommended the designation, as did HDPC, and it was for significant architectural features.
I believe, can I?
Go ahead.
Oh, I think they've already done a lot of work to this house since this picture was taken. Landscaped. Is this one now that's painted white and has a whole lot of landscaping and everything done to it since they purchased it? But I think it's historically significant.
I don't have an email of their objection. Were they one of the ones from public comment?
I think so, because I couldn't find written correspondence either.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember them coming, and the big issue they made was, well, it hasn't been there forever. It was moved from Sullivan's Island.
Mm.
That was the only issue I heard as the rationale why we shouldn't keep it.
You know, yeah. So are we comfortable with recommending this one to be out, or do you want to keep it in? I mean, when I look at it, it doesn't look, you know, I mean, I'm not an expert on this, but it doesn't look historically significant to me. But it was, you know, it's moved from Sullivan's Island, this military installation.
I think the historic nature is the size of it and the fact that that size blends in with what has been there forever.
Do you think we should keep it in?
I do.
You do?
I do.
Is that, okay. All right. We will recommend to keep in 627 as well.
Okay.
All right, next property.
704 Pitt Street. And it was recommended by both staff and the commission for significant architectural features. You'll recall this was originally an ice house, and I think the owner sent in several pictures and images saying that they felt like much of it had been replaced.
Yep. This is one that I could go either way on. The reason being is it's not what it was originally built to be.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been additions to it. It doesn't really look like what's in the area. And I could go either way.
Yeah, I think this one, you know, it was... There's an original structure buried in there somewhere, but it's more than half of the house is something new.
Exactly.
All right, I'm comfortable with taking it out.
I'd leave it. But
you'd leave it? Okay.
Yeah. What
do you, out. You're okay with, okay, out. So 704, we could be out. All right.
I'm sorry, what was that, to remove it from the recommendation?
To remove it, yeah.
Okay. Okay, next we have 740 Pitt Street. And you also received quite a bit of correspondence regarding this one as well. And it was recommended as contributing based on the significant architectural features.
Right, this was the house that said that their blocks that are the blocks at Lowe's for $1.44 each. That was there.
That's right.
That their cement, the original walls are cement blocks that you can buy at Lowe's for $1.44. And the house was constructed in several phases after Hurricane Hugo.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm comfortable with removing this one from it.
I'm okay with whatever you think. Because, you know, if they put all this new stuff in there, hasn't blended in.
Mm-hmm.
Or they tried to blend it in, but it's still not significant in that what was there and what they've added to it.
I'm for leaving it. it fits, you know, the character of the home fits in the area, and it predates 1930 originally. And I think of what it could become if we don't protect it. So those are my thoughts.
Mm. Mr. Chapman, do you have any further?
Well, I need to ask a question then. This house, if we take it out, and they decide, or another homeowner, another buyer comes in and wants to demolish it, what happens?
It would be reviewed by the, if it's not designated historic, any demolition within the Old Village is reviewed by the Historic District Commission. If it is designated as historic, it's going to be much more difficult
to tear
down.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they note in their email that the house next door to them was torn down and a 5,400 square foot house was replaced. You know, they have no intention of replacing their house, but they're concerned that designating the house as historic would make it difficult to sell.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think designating historic is actually like a positive.
Yes. Well, I believe their argument hurts their argument because that's just a prime example. When things aren't protected, that's what we end up with, what they have next door.
But it seems like
it's not in character with the neighborhood anymore.
Yeah. But it seems like it may have been redone in the character of, but that there's very little that's still original too. And that's where I'm wondering, you know, does that, just because they've maintained the architecture that's historic, does that make the house historic?
Mm-hmm.
You think so?
Yeah. I have a property downtown, so I guess I had to deal with the city of Charleston over, and there was nothing original to mine except the one wall on the porch, the siding, and they still made me keep it. So, you know, they have arguments for reasons that had to do with the character and the area that it's in, and, you know, so I've heard every city argument. They wouldn't let me alter it at all.
So you want to leave 7:30?
So they're good arguments.
I could go either way on this.
I'm for leaving it. But.
Okay, well, why don't we leave it in then and see. And there is an appeals process, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
So leave 740 Pitt in the recommendation.
Okay.
And last, we have 826. Let's see.
Let me pull up in my...
And I think this was the one that we had a commission member email about. If you'll recall, he was mistaken. He thought it was voting on 834 Pitt.
Right.
And so he wanted to, after the fact, change his vote. And of course he couldn't, but he wanted to inform you all of his
mistake,
sort of change of heart for that.
Right.
But he was only one person, and we did receive a request to leave everything because of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And study that they put into choosing these homes. So,
is this one that has?
We've heard an opposing opinion from another member.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chapman, go ahead.
Is this one where we've got brick and wood in another picture?
Yep, I'm looking at the photo now.
Where we've got wood
and
rotting siding on the porch and all.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what
I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind removing this one.
Yeah, I'm comfortable removing this one as well. Just looking at the pictures, it doesn't seem.
Okay, so
I think there's been too much added to it.
Yeah.
To make it
historic.
Sort of non-conforming, if you will.
So the only two that we would recommend to full council that we would take out would be 704 and 826 Pitt. And then we would, the other ones that objected, that we're saying keep those in.
That's correct.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Comfortable with that? Okay.
Yeah. And I don't think we need a motion to do that, or are we comfortable with?
I think it
a motion?
I don't, yeah, I think it would be good to probably do that.
All right, do we have a motion?
Okay, I'll move that we remove from the recommendation from the, is it this Historic District Commission? 704 Pitt and 826 Pitt.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye, all right, thank you so much. Moving on to item eight, discussion on the building permit allocation and the multifamily housing moratorium. I think, do we have any further update on those that is not for executive session, or perhaps we should go into executive session?
I have just a couple of things I can update you with based on the last meeting, and then we can go from there. Like you said, I won't go into everything Jeff covered last month. You know that the amount of allocation. I did want to point out a couple of things because we're going to be talking about the multifamily moratorium as well. The building permit allocation system exempts two things. It exempts affordable housing per HUD guidelines, and then it exempts properties with a lawful agreement and a valid vested rights. Mr. Chapman, last meeting, you had asked about the two developments that are exempt. And so I wanted to give you some numbers there. We have Carolina Park and Liberty Hill Farms. Again, they're not included. Their development agreements predate this ordinance. Liberty Hill is actually a phased program. You can see from the time period, so they have their own sort of allotted number of permits based on their anniversary dates from their agreement. So you can see how many that they have, and then the aggregate is 330. They are waiting right now for final approval of the final plat for phase 1A, which would be 16 lots. I know that our permit review folks have looked at about 10 of those, but so we haven't issued any permits for Liberty Hill Farms, but you can kind of get an idea of what's coming. Carolina Park, from January to November, we've issued 122 single family. We just had the last phase, phase J. It went through our design review team, and it's on planning commission for February. It's a sketch plan for 38 lots, and then they have about 19 lots remaining after that. But phase J is really the last phase that we have any sort of review going on at this time. And then I did want to provide you with, we just updated our numbers based on December. So just when you look in terms of what the purpose of the building permit allocation system was and how our growth rate looks, our dwelling units were actually, you can see, so when we put the building permit allocation system in place, we sort of had this intent of lowering the growth rate, I think, of like below 2%. And you can see that we are based on, after we got the December numbers, we're at 1.29% with the dwelling unit growth rate. And then you can also see to the right the single family versus multifamily townhouse and then ADUs. And so I wanted to throw that in there. And then also, if you would look at our, if you were to look at our population growth, it's really similar. I think it's about 1.4%. So if you look at the building permit allocation in terms of that, you can kind of see how it's affected our growth rate. Jeff went over these permits or these observations and recommendations last time, so I won't go over those again. And then I really had the same thing with the multifamily moratorium. I wanted to point out again what it exempts, and it exempts senior housing and then vested plans. And so that was sort of the difference in what they both plans exempt. So you can think in terms of, as we move forward, what's being captured in each ordinance. So I'm happy to answer any questions or.
You know, I think the one of the concerns that I had was the fact that these two are don't have the same exemptions, right? I think that if we moving forward in the future, should we move forward with, you know, with these systems, that we would want to exempt affordable housing from the multifamily as well, so that it's in harmony with our building permit allocation system. Should we move forward in that direction? Does anyone else have any thoughts or questions before we go into executive session?
No, ma'am.
No. All right. Do I have a motion to go into executive session?
So moved.
Okay, executive session to receive legal advice related to building permit allocation system post-executive session. Committee may take action on any item, including any subsection of any section listed on an executive session agenda discussed in executive session during a properly noticed meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, we are in executive session. Executive session, do we have any motions?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am, I would move that we request our attorneys to prepare a revision to the multifamily ordinance as discussed in executive session.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, motion carries, and I'd like to ask for that to be on the agenda with an executive session for Tuesday night. Is there anything else to come before this meeting? Any other final parting comments? All right.
Ma'am.
We are adjourned.
Thank you.